Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, and today we have an important guest from Europe, Ben Braca. Ben is the Director General at the Federal Ministry for Digital Affairs and Transport in Germany. He's one of Europe's most important leaders in technology and innovation. I have so many questions, including the transatlantic tech policy moving forward. Ben, it's good to have you back here at the House at 1229.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's great.
It's great to be back. It's great to be back. Thanks for the invitation. Very kind.
Excellent. I want to ask you about the Paris AI Action Summit coming out of there, Vice President J.D. Vance's speech at the Munich Security Conference, tech policy priorities, digital infrastructures. But before we get started, let's talk about the German election only days ago. How does that change things?
Thank you very much. Important question. Let me start perhaps from the outset. I got hold of a copy yesterday from Foreign Affairs. And on the cover, it said that the center will not hold. Probably that was a reference to the US situation on which I can't really comment. But there's an article in it where it was said that in Germany, the center can hold. After the elections, we see that the center actually was strengthened. Currently, the only realistic option to form a new government is a coalition between the Conservative Party that actually succeeded in the election and the Social Democratic Party. That is called a so-called grand coalition. However, it's not that grand any longer because both parties lost shares if you compare it to historical results. The most important question is how long will it take to form a government? And against a challenging international background, we all hope that this will be done in a very short time because the world, as we say in Germany, is not waiting for Germany, but we need to speak up. We need to speak up in international relations and we have some homework to do domestically and in the European Union. When it comes to the European Union, we need to focus on competitiveness. When it comes to our domestic affairs, we need to get a hold on the migration situation we have in Germany. And when we broaden the view a bit on the international scene, we need to have a chancellor in place that is backed by a strong government in order to talk to international decision makers, for most probably the US American president.
So what timing are we talking about? And of course, this is all about us, the tech policy.
Yes.
We'll get to that next, but what's the cadence?
I hope, and I think it's realistic to say that second half of April might be the point where we will see a new government. Mm-hmm.
And what happens in the interim? Because we just had J.D. Vance in Munich. Actually, why don't we just go right to that now and your reaction?
Yeah. The reaction to J.D. Vance's speech, where he was primarily focused on free speech and was challenging the EU, especially with regulation on the DSAs, the so-called Digital Services Act. You can talk about whether or not that was, how to say, the right point he was making, but I would invite each and everyone to have a closer look at the regulation of free speech in the European Union, because the DSA is not so much about the regulation of free speech. It's more the contrary. It's about the illegal content defined by the national law or by the European law that it is targeting and where the platforms are obliged to take it down. By the way, not only the US American platforms, as it is often said, it's each and every platform. The US American platforms are in such a spotlight because they are regulated right out of Brussels. But my ministry, for example, is also responsible for the implementation and the enforcement of the DSA in Germany. And there we have a lot of platforms, but we are taking very good care of that as well. Of course, there's also a reference to free speech in the DSA insofar as that if there is a systemic risk, then the platforms should apply the correct measures. There is no definition whatsoever these measures might be. So there is no obligation to install fact checkers or to focus only on community notes. On the contrary, it's an invitation to the platforms to talk with the European Commission about the right measures. Measures that could be right yesterday might not be the right ones tomorrow because the innovation and the technology is so quickly developing. So it's a flexible framework to have this kind of conversation with all actors and the European Commission about the right ways to tackle these challenges of disinformation and hate speech.
Okay, I'm going to say it. So there I was at the Paris AI Summit, and everyone's looking at the Americans like, you don't follow rules. You don't like any regulations. So somehow you're talking about bringing that all together. I don't know how that works. I mean, what's your next steps to try to get that cooperation?
I don't think that there is a need to get the cooperation. The cooperation is already ongoing.
So you're saying you're getting what you need, not just from the American companies, but all across the digital companies.
So far, actually, when we talk about the DSA, and there's the DMA, I would like to talk about that as well. When we talk about the DSA, there is a regular exchange between the big platforms and the European Commission that is the enforcer and the regulator for them. So far, we don't see a necessity to adjust this. On the contrary, there are certain procedures in place already. You might have heard that there have been some alleged interference with the Romanian elections. So the European Commission asked especially TikTok to store the data so that they could have a look at the data and take an analysis whether or not there was real interference. So I would invite each and everyone to give the DSA a piece of legislation that is in place for now 1.5 years, a bit more time to show its effectiveness. If it shouldn't be effective, we need to have a conversation, not only in Europe, but also with the platforms and with our transatlantic partners.
But where things are going over here is, we don't want you to look at anything, that no one needs to look at anything, that the market works. And the difference is that the companies have made changes now, the major companies.
It's interesting that you say that. We say that. So who is we? Because when you look at the DMA, which is a piece of legislation that is actually focused on competition.
Yes, explain that.
We have the DMA in place, the Digital Markets Act, that should prohibit large platforms to use their power of the market in one market to obtain a dominant position in a neighboring market. So it is pretty much about the regulation of gatekeepers. What's very interesting is, this piece of legislation is perceived as something that is anti-US. But we see actually a lot of US-American companies using the DMA to go after the large platforms because they think that these platforms abuse their power in a way that they are not allowing apps to run on a platform or some software. So there is no this kind of we are against it. There are some companies actually that are in close cooperation and talk to the Commission about the presumed or the assumed misuse of power because there is this piece of legislation in place that can work. And correct me if I'm wrong, there's nothing comparable on the other side of the Atlantic. So actually, that could serve as a base to have a conversation with the U.S. administration about this.
And have you talked to the new U.S. administration White House officials? Or will you talk to them while you're here in D.C.?
We will talk especially to the State Department and there especially to my counterparts that are responsible for digital international policy, the G7 and the G20 and the OECD. Because that is a bit under the radar, right? The multilateral fora, we also need to strengthen. It's also about bilateral digital policy, but we need to focus also on a multilateral digital policy.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the Paris AI Summit. Yeah. What was your reaction?
I think it is a very good thing that President Macron put such a strong emphasis on AI, especially after the announcements we heard here from the US. It's also good that there was a mobilization of investment capital for AI. However, if you ask me if money is the solution to it, I would always say it is part of the solution. But one problem we are faced with in the European Union, and I'm happy that the European Commission is now really focusing on this, is that there is a lack of competitiveness. So why is that? It is primarily because the enforcement of European law is up to the member states. Now imagine you have a law on the EU level and you have 27 enforcement agencies. And if someone is not happy with the enforcement, then he turned to a national court. And the national court is actually interpreting the EU law. So that, of course, stands in the way of a unified digital single market. And that does not allow for companies to thrive, for companies to scale and to really compete. So that is something we really put our eyes on. And by the way, in this regard, the DSA and the DMA are very good pieces of legislation because for the first time, they define certain criteria where companies are regulated right out of Brussels. So we don't leave it up to an Irish regulator or to a Luxembourg court to interpret whether or not this is legally right.
Well, this was the complaint at the AI yeah. summit of all the VCs. And they were all there cheering Macron on yeah. and everyone else. But at the end of the day, what are you going to change? So what will the EU change?
The EU needs to change this. So in the way that we have more regulation and more enforcement coming right out of Brussels, first thing. Second thing is we need to focus whether or not the European market is the right point of reference when we talk about competitiveness. You might remember or not that in the past, there was the attempt to merge Siemens and Alstom. The European Commission said that would have been too big for the European market, but it might have been the right size to compete with other global companies in that market. So we need to ask ourselves, if we allow for companies to scale up in the European Union, what should be the limit? Yeah, is the limit the European market, or should we allow them to grow in a way that they're able to compete, for example, with the hyperscalers or platforms from the US? And then the third thing, we need to get the framework right on venture capital. And that is for the Capital Markets Union to be installed in a way. I think that is the right way forward. And if we gain competitiveness, I think the European Union will be again perceived as an economic powerhouse that is eye to eye with other regions in the world.
Well, everyone kept pointing at and said, Mistral, Mistral, they got more money. That was it. And then nothing after that.
I'm happy for Mistral. And as I'm also happy, by the way, for Aleph Alpha, a German AI company that also raised a lot of money. But the thing is that this focus on spending money on certain companies, that is okay from a venture capital point of view, because they need to pick the companies and they need to invest. The state should care about the right framework that these investments can be done. And that is the right framework for venture capital. That is the right framework for competitiveness. And it is the right framework, actually, for a digital single market. And that is where the state should focus. It's perhaps not that sexy as spending money, billions and billions on companies. But I think this is the only way, because we're talking about digital companies now. But of course, there are a lot of companies in the energy sector, for example, in the automotive sector, in the train sector. So we need to get the framework right for each and every company.
Okay, I want to get to energy in a minute,
yeah.
but China signed the joint statement on inclusivity and sustainability and artificial intelligence in Paris. The US and the UK did not. And just to read real quickly, ensuring AI is open, inclusive, transparent, ethical, safe, secure, and trustworthy, 60 total countries signed it. How do you feel about that?
We need to focus on the fora on the international level where regulation is being discussed and actually implemented. With all due respect to the Paris AI Summit, there is no structure, there is no implementation. It has a declaratory meaning. And that is good. I don't want to actually criticize this. But the thing is, in order to get all these principles done, you need to have some kind of an international organization that is actually operationalizing this. So that is the reason why we really do hope that the support of the United States for especially the OECD is ongoing. Because with the OECD, we have an international think tank. It's not a politicized organization where actually scientists are working on. We have the open democratic economies reunited over there. There we can implement all these principles in a way that they are handable, that they're tangible for companies if they would like to actually adhere to this. Because what does that mean, ethical AI? What does it mean if I would like to put product or services on AI safe and secure into the market? What do I have to pay attention to? And the right place to do this and to deliver on this is the OECD.
Well, I like it because these global alliances make all the difference. And even at this table, if we went around and asked everyone what AI means to them, ethical AI, applied AI, you name anything, we're going to have different answers. So to go to the world and say, this is how you should do things and align it. That's why you're here, because you do that kind of thing. Okay, let's turn to energy. Here in the US, there's all kinds of conversation about data centers and how they'll be powered. Even just right across the bridge over here, Virginia is the number one state in the US on energy. And even Meta and other big companies, maybe Apple, are over there trying to figure out how they're going to power all of this. What about in Germany?
That is a very good question. The energy question will be back on the international agenda because it'll be a geopolitical one. For AI, and I don't have to tell you this, Tammy, you need enormous amounts of energy. So where should this energy come from? You know, in Germany, we have a discussion going on. We decided actually to opt out from nuclear. We decided to opt out from coal. So we're putting everything on renewable. I hear from the platforms that are focused also on AI that they also would like to focus on renewables. But if you invest in renewables, you need to invest in the grid because you need to manage renewable energies because they are simply not there. You need to invest in storage capacities and batteries and in the management of the grid. That will take time. So in the meantime, you need to come up with some different solutions. And that's the reason I think why some companies are now again investing in nuclear. So that is probably not an option for Germany because we had a thorough political discussion to opt out from nuclear. However, if it's true that you need enormous amounts of energy, you will probably put the data centers in places where energy is cheap. And these places might not be, how to say, blossoms at the bouquet of democracy. So that will put them in a very powerful position, of course. So how should this be resolved? I don't know. But it has to be resolved and it has to be on top of the political agenda because we need to invest in infrastructure. And I'm happy that the European Union is actually focusing on this one. But the question where the energy should come from will remain. It needs to be solved.
Do you think that DeepSeek truly did not use as much energy? What's your take?
I don't have any insights on that, I have to say, so I can't really comment on this. I know that there are discussions going on exactly those points you mentioned. Is it really cheap? Did it really only use small amounts of energy? What about the data they were using in order to train the model? I think there are a lot of questions, and I really hope for us looking into the future that there is a bit more transparency on these questions from the Chinese side.
And what about the larger China question and their role in really all the things that we're talking about?
It remains a challenge. I think with China, nothing has changed that much lately. I think it remains a challenge when we look at China as a partner, a strategic rival, as we say also in our China strategy of the German government. It is most certainly a country with which we actually need to stay in close contact because China needs Europe. That is something actually that is not really paying much attention to, because for a very long time, I think, especially from the German industry, China was perceived as a market. But when you look at automotive currently, they are exporting now more and more cars to the European Union, to Germany. So it's vice versa, kind of. And that, of course, puts us in a very good position to talk to China as well on the right legal framework and on the right conditions, actually, not only on export, but when we talk about electric vehicles, we will have a conversation about the use of data, for example, as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about, as we call it here in Washington, the Elon Musk of it all? Here in the U.S. and in Washington, we've got Doge. I'm not going to ask you about that. But clearly, Elon Musk, through Starlink and his other companies, Tesla, et cetera, was trying to play a role in politics. I'm not going to ask you that either. But I did want to ask you about your take on him as an important figure in technology today.
It's very, very difficult. You know, in literature, you say often you need to separate the oeuvre from the author. So if we do this now in technology, of course, you can praise him for the inventions, for the progress he made. I was very personally really impressed when I saw this rocket coming back to Earth and being caught by this container thing. I thought this looked like Star Wars or Star Trek or something. But that's only my very personal view on that. So if we just look on his oeuvre, I think you can say, well done with Starlink, with Tesla, of course, but also with SpaceX. Very good invention. Obviously, something that also triggered competition. Obviously, something that also calls for action on the other side of the Atlantic, especially when we talk about rockets.
And what about the other AI leaders, Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Cook, all of them? They're working much more closely with government. Of course, they always had. But this government here, the new Trump administration, demands CEOs to be front and center on the issues that we're talking about. How much time do you have to spend just trying to work together with the companies or the U.S. government, or, you know, how do you navigate any of this now?
I think actually companies should decide what should be front and center for them. If it's politics, then it's politics. I had 10 years working for IBM. Politics played a role. But of course, a company is driven by benefits. And so I can't really comment on that. If they think it's valuable, if they think that's the way forward, of course, they should then focus on politics. But that should be up to the companies to decide.
Are you allowed to tell me who your favorite AI product is? Can you tell that?
It's funny.
Come on,
it's,
guys. Don't you want to know what he uses those? And then I'm going to ask all of you.
I tell you two things with regard to ChatGPT. I know you don't have this kind of differentiation here in the English language, but it's funny. ChatGPT in Germany, it's telling you or it's answering you in a very polite way. I found it kind of remarkable. I don't know if that's only for the German market, probably, because we have this kind of differentiation in our language, but that was very funny. But now if you ask me about my favorite AI platform, quite frankly, it's probably not these large language models that I'm really focused on. I have a music platform, and the recommendations that are being done by AI, that actually is really something that enhanced my life, because the music that was recommended, I would have never stumbled over that if there wasn't any recommendation from this music platform. So that is actually something that cheered me up a bit, and I'm still benefiting from them. And so that is probably my favorite AI application.
Oh, I like that. Excellent. Good answer, don't you think? Ben, thank you so much for this interview. We're so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
And now, sorry for the podcast listeners, we're going off the record and we're going to get all the rest of it. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you all for being here. This is the Washington AI Network here at the House of 1229. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.